Hey friends, welcome to the Natasha Crane podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how mainstream media gaslights Christians and pretty much everyone else who disagrees with them. If you're not sure what that gaslight word means, I'm going to explain that in a second, but let's back up here. So I had a revelation last week that in retrospect was many years overdue. In fact, it is so overdue that it borders on embarrassing to admit that this was a revelation in 2022, but here it is. Mainstream media doesn't try to be objective. Now, before you laugh too hard, let me make a clear distinction. I have long known that mainstream media is not objective, but I had somehow strangely held on to this assumption that they thought they were being objective, but they just woefully lacked enough self-awareness to see how crazily biased they were. What I realized last week is that of course they know how biased they are, whether they've ever stopped to acknowledge the changed nature of so-called news or not. We've simply drifted over time into this land where the unstated new normal is that virtually all news is essentially op-ed. I think the reason, honestly, that I naively held on to this idea that news is inherently supposed to be objective is that I started out as a broadcast journalism major in college. Way back in the ancient days of 1994, I was taking classes that presupposed, gasp, every good journalist should be objective. Our news story homework assignments would come back to us with the finest of edits designed to carefully root out any trace of bias. After all, if we ever wanted a shot at working for a place as heralded as CNN was at the time, we had to learn how to be unbiased. That is such a crazy thought today. Not only is mainstream media not trying to be objective, but they're also openly advocating for specific viewpoints. And not only are they openly advocating for specific viewpoints, but they're also strategically manipulating public thought. The psychological manipulation over time in search for control over people's thinking is called gaslighting. It's basically this process of making someone believe they're crazy and question their entire view of reality. Now, maybe that sounds dramatic, but I don't think that it is. There is a coordinated effort amongst mainstream media sources to achieve a specific type of public influence today, an influence that's directed toward achieving a uniformity of thought that's nearly always at odds with a Christian worldview. While Christians realize this to varying degrees, I don't believe we're collectively thinking enough through the implications of just how much this media sea change has affected, is affecting, and will affect both our own worldview and the worldview of those around us. So in today's episode, I want to consider the significance of five implicit messages that mainstream media is constantly trumpeting in a variety of ways. Here's the first message they want you to get. Pretty much everyone agrees with how to view issues of cultural importance. If you're one of the ones who disagree, you're on the extreme fringe of society. That should tell you something about the accuracy and reasonableness of your views. Now, to be clear, that's not me saying that. That's a message that I believe media is constantly portraying. So let me explain. In the early 1980s, there were 50 independent companies that owned the majority of media in the U.S. But by 2011, just six conglomerates controlled 90% of media. The fact that a handful of companies control nearly all media outlets makes it possible to present a unified viewpoint on any issue. See, it looks to media consumers as though the authoritative news voices around them are all aligned with certain viewpoints, but it's really all coming from the same handful of companies. Make no mistake, the appearance of unified thought coming from sources people perceive to be representative of culture at large is very powerful, especially when you're in a worldview minority. As I discuss at length in Faithfully Different, my new book, it's estimated that only 6% of Americans have a biblical worldview, or accepting core teachings of the Bible, in other words. Yes, 65% of Americans identify themselves with the label Christian, but the vast majority of self-identified Christians hold beliefs in conflict with basic biblical teachings about things such as the existence of objective morality, the reality of heaven and hell, the nature of God, and much more. So if you're in the 6% whose worldview is based on what the Bible teaches, you're going to feel the pressure of seeing that nearly everyone in culture, including those who identify as a Christian, thinks differently. And media wants to capitalize on that aspect of our humanity that makes us question our beliefs just because they differ from the norm. But we have to remember, there's no such thing as democracy when it comes to what's true about reality. Numbers will never determine truth. If you want to read more about that, I have an article called Are Christians the New Extremists? Yes, and that's okay, on my blog, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes for this. And if you want more clarity around the biblical worldview amongst the pressures of secular culture, be sure to check out my new book, Faithfully Different. That's what it's all about, and I'll have a link as well. Let's talk about the second message now that media wants you to hear loud and clear. Here's the language that's acceptable to use if you're going to be an acceptable member of society. So beyond the uniformity of viewpoint that's achievable due to the structure of media ownership, there's uniformity even at the detailed level of language. And that's because there's a language guide that has long functioned as the default style manual for mainstream news organizations. It's called the Associated Press, or AP, Stylebook. The AP Stylebook goes far beyond what words everyone should capitalize in a headline or when to hyphenate. They actually give viewpoint guidance as well. They recently issued, for example, a guide for coverage on transgender issues, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes so that you can read it for yourself. But the guide ironically begins, quote, "Journalists on all beats must be able to write about and interview transgender people using accurate, sensitive, unbiased language." But what follows in their guide is anything but unbiased. Here's just a small sampling of what they are telling media outlets to do. First, they tell them to adopt the language, quote, "sex assigned at birth," rather than something like "birth gender" or "born a girl," presumably because they want to emphasize how arbitrary the sex, quote unquote, assignment decision is. They also tell media outlets to describe a transgender person using phrasing such as, quote, "is a woman," rather than, quote, "identifies as a woman," again, presumably to emphasize the certainty of a person's new identity. They tell media to avoid terms like biological male, which they say are used by opponents of transgender rights to oversimplify sex and gender. And as a last example, they tell the media to not use phrasing that, quote, "misgenders people" or implies doubt, such as "former men's swimmer" or "currently competes as a woman." That's just a small fraction of the content in this guide, and I really encourage you to read it for yourself so you can see firsthand how all media is being directed to provide this uniform viewpoint. It's very clear that journalistic expectations now include using language in a way that accepts and promotes the mainstream secular narrative. The more the public hears carefully curated phrasing designed to subconsciously transform how we view issues, the more those who refuse to use such language will be viewed with resentment. Once again, the idea is that this is where society is at large, and if you're not there with your words, there's something wrong with you. On a side note to that, if you've ever marveled at how mainstream media can euphemistically refer to the intentional killing of preborn babies as, quote, "abortion care," this is the same strategy at work. Transform the language, and you'll transform how people think. The third message that mainstream media implicitly wants to convey is that these are the subjects that are most important to know about and discuss. So every day, thousands and thousands of editorial decisions are made as to what makes the news. In other words, before we even get to the bias in how stories are told, we have the bias of what subjects are even selected to tell in the first place. One study, for example, showed that the major broadcast networks gave 3 times more airtime to the pro-choice women's march than to the pro-life march for life, despite comparable participant numbers and location. If you had been watching these networks, it would have been easy to assume that the pro-choice women's march was far more culturally significant, even if that wasn't necessarily the case. I actually regularly visit the Facebook news tab to track this phenomenon and see what they're pushing users to consider important. And it's really fascinating. I encourage you to look there to understand what's going on. But from the looks of it, Facebook really wants me to be aware when a celebrity changes pronouns, it was Demi Lovato this week, when new state abortion restrictions have allegedly jeopardized a woman's health, and that Christian nationalism is a terrifying threat. Story selection strongly shapes our view of what the world is talking about, and that can significantly influence what we believe is most important if we're not careful. But there are all kinds of issues that are important for Christians that you'll rarely see discussed in mainstream media. Wins for religious freedom, for example, will likely not see the light of day, or if they do, they'll be covered negatively. So Christians really need to take it upon ourselves to stay informed about issues mainstream media won't discuss. And for religious freedom issues in particular, I highly recommend following the Alliance Defending Freedom. I'll put a link to them in the show notes as well. Here's the fourth idea that mainstream media wants you to get. These are the things you need to be very afraid of, and the solutions that will make you safe again. Whether it's COVID, monkeypox, climate change, the loss of supposed abortion rights, or the idea that the world is one step away from nuclear annihilation, continually perpetuating fear drives ratings and clicks. It just does. And frankly, that's just business. It's how they make money. But fear is also undoubtedly used strategically to push people to favor desired solutions. This is a tactic that works with just about anyone, Christian or not, because it speaks to our human nature. We just have to be self-aware enough to recognize it. When people are scared for themselves, they're more likely to hand over freedoms to the government to ensure some measure of safety. But the bigger the government control in the name of safety for all, the lesser the tolerance and rights for any who won't fall in line. And when people are scared for others, they're more likely to accept positions that might otherwise be at odds with their own moral knowledge. I've read countless comments from Christians, for example, who are afraid to take a stand against so-called gender affirmation surgeries for teens because they've been told teens will commit suicide if they aren't affirmed in a chosen gender. Media sees what fear can drive and continually perpetuates those kinds of statistics to sway views based on fear. And if this is an area that you feel like you need to understand better, I can't recommend Abigail Schreier's book enough. It's called Irreversible Damage: The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. It's an absolute must read, and I will put a link also to that in the comments. Similarly, many Christians claim to be pro-life personally, but don't support banning abortion because media has made them fear that women will die due to situations like ectopic pregnancies. This is completely false. And here's another link for you I'll put into the show notes about six myths that the media keeps perpetuating around this subject. When people are scared, whether for themselves or others, it gives media a reason to take the presumed moral high ground and demonize anyone who doesn't support safety. That's effective because now you're not someone who simply disagrees, you're someone who is putting others in either mental or physical jeopardy. Christians on the receiving end of that characterization need to be deeply convicted of the biblical justification for their positions in order to not feel the psychological weight of thinking their views actually hurt others. And for the record, I'm not saying that there aren't things to be legitimately concerned about. I'm specifically talking about how the media elevates appropriate levels of concern to a point where they can leverage crisis-level fear to their benefit and agenda. And finally, the fifth message that mainstream media really wants you to hear is this. It's not just us saying these things. Look at all these Christian leaders who agree. Trust them, even if you don't trust us. Someone not following the news closely might think that Christians are actually well represented in the media. After all, mainstream outlets somewhat regularly feature interviews with or articles about various Christian leaders. CNN, for example, recently featured a lengthy interview with high-profile pastor Andy Stanley titled, "The Evangelical Church Faces a State of Emergency Over the Pandemic and Politics," Andy Stanley says. But Of course, CNN was pleased to publish an interview with a well-known pastor criticizing the evangelical church and scolding Christians for taking sides in politics. That's what they'd like to do themselves, but it's more effective to have one of our own say it in the hope we'll question any differing understanding we may have. And this interview was based on Stanley's new best-selling book, Not In It to Win It, Why Choosing Sides Sidelines the Church, which I discussed the problems with in my last episode called Why Christians Must Care About Politics. So if that's something you missed, go back and take a listen to that. Similarly, the Washington Post is happy this week to feature the headline, Clerics Sue Over Florida Abortion Law, Saying It Violates Religious Freedom. Of course, they're going for the shock value of suggesting that religious leaders are for abortion as much as anyone else, and that it's actually a matter of religious freedom. Any Christian writer, speaker, or pastor whom mainstream media is happy to feature should take deep stock of why they're receiving an invitation to the party. It's not because media wants to genuinely share a Christian view that differs from the norm. It's almost certainly because your view doesn't differ from the norm that they want to promote your voice as an example to all those other Christians. And if your view doesn't differ from the norm, it's probably a good time to consider if the media has already done a really good job of convincing you to think like them. As I wrap up here, I just want to share with you that the other day, my son and I drove by a used bookstore in town, and he noted the sign posted in the front. It said, "Browse books and exchange ideas." He jokingly said, "Hey, that might be the last place for the free sharing of ideas in America." And we kind of laughed at that thought, that the final outpost for the welcome exchange of differing views might be at this tiny bookstore in our town. But honestly, the way that mainstream media functions today, it's not far from the truth that the open exchange of ideas will have to happen in places people very intentionally seek out. Thanks so much for listening today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please tell a friend, share it with others, and give a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen. I really appreciate it. I love seeing the words of encouragement that I found in the reviews, and I so much appreciate you taking the time to do that. Thanks so much for listening, and I will talk with you soon. Bye-bye.